Hi, I'm Felicity, and welcome to We Are YA, The Check-In, a weekday chat with young adult authors. We're checking in and seeing how your favourite YA authors are doing at home during this very unique time, and of course, talking about books. This episode of The Check-In will include discussions about sexual assault and harassment. If you or anyone you know needs assistance, please contact RAINN via their website, RAINN.org, or their toll-free number, 1-800-656-4673. My guest today is Laurie Hulse Anderson. She is a New York Times best-selling author known for tackling tough subjects with humour and sensitivity. Two of her books, Speak and Chains, were National Book Award finalists, and Chains was also shortlisted for the United Kingdom's Carnegie Medal. She was selected by the American Library Association for the Margaret A. E. Edwards Award for her significant contribution to young adult literature. Laurie has also been honoured for her battles for intellectual freedom by the National Coalition Against Censorship and the National Council of Teachers and English. She is a member of RAINN's National Leadership Council and frequently speaks about sexual violence. Her latest novel, Shout, was just released in paperback. Laurie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Felicity.
And where am I speaking to you from?
So I live about a stone's throw outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And what's Pennsylvania, Philadelphia like with all of this?
Well, we have a wonderful governor here, a guy named Tom Wolf. And I think given the absence of national leadership in this moment, we have to really, really appreciate those of us who live in states that are managed by smart, you know, compassionate people. And our county government is also the woman who's the head commissioner of that is actually a physician. Oh. So I think, you know, we did a lockdown in our county early. We have a fair amount of it in this county and even in my town. Mm-hmm. So we're all practicing social distancing and being kind with each other and trying to stay safe.
Mm-hmm. I think being kind with each other is very important.
Absolutely.
Firstly, for those who don't know anything about Shout, what's it about?
Well, Shout is not a novel, which surprises a lot of people. Mm. You know, I the idea hit me so strong in the gut. And at the same time as I conceived of the writing of the book, I also knew that I wanted to write it in a different way. Mm-hmm. So Shout is not fictional. It is my life story and the context that I grew up in, both my family, my biological family at home, people who were a huge influence on me, both when I was young growing up and also as I got older. And it sort of kind of traces the arc of a kid who experienced sexual violence. I was raped when I was 13 and didn't tell anyone for decades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of crawled my way out of PTSD and sorrow and tried to put my life together, often making a lot of mistakes. but I wanted to really, you know, Emily Dickinson talks about truth told slant. And that's what poetry offers us. Mm-hmm. I wanted to boil these experiences down to the absolute marrow of their essence. And that's why I wrote the book in free verse.
Mm. And I think it's also so beautifully done because that simplistic, as you said, pulled down marrowness of it is so raw and so honest. And it really gets to the gut of what you're talking about.
I appreciate that. I think that more than anything, this book is me inviting my readers to be in conversation with me, sharing a space with me. And I, all that, you know, when you're writing poetry, you generally have a lot of white space on the page. Mm-hmm. And I think of that as room for the readers to sit in. I hope people are scribbling notes in the book on those, in those margins. Cause people have a lot of experiences of their own and feelings and responses. So this is a book about conversations.
Mm. Well, and you said it at the start that many people thought this was a novel and almost a sequel to Speak, which was probably one of your most well-known books. How do these two books exist together, but also apart?
Oh, that's a great, that's a good question. They're sister books. So Speak is about 20 years now, which is shocking. I don't know. Time. I've given up trying to understand time.
I mean, we haven't aged a day.
No. Hardly. But when I wrote Speak, first of all, I never thought it was going to be published. Never. Mm-hmm. So it was really a book that I wrote for myself at the time when I had finally gone to therapy and was getting some much needed help for my depression. And my oldest child at that point was in middle school. So I think I was also thinking about trying to be the best parent I could be for my kids as they got to adolescence. And then somehow Speak gets published, and wow, that was a big shock. And so what connects the two books is the experience of being the author of Speak, what led me to write Speak, and then the experience of going out into the world and listening to tens of thousands of other survivors and listening to their stories. Speak was sort of my emotional truth, filtered heavily through fiction. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I was willing to share with the world at that point. And then, you know, I'm 20 years older. I'm a lot, I'm 100 years sassier. And I have no problem sharing my truth now. So that's mm-hmm. why Shout is written the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you've talked about it, but your inspiration when you were came for Shout, when you were writing something completely different. Mm. And what was that moment? What was the match?
Oh, man, it was... that was 11th Avenue, walking down 11th Avenue to the Javits Center in New York City. I was on my way to Comic-Con to talk about the Speak graphic novel. And this was as Harvey Weinstein had finally begun to be called accountable for his decades of serial abuse and rape of women. And coming very quickly on the heels of people calling him, women calling him out, and some men too, where it came the backlash. You know, we see this consistently when survivors of sexual violence find the courage to speak up and tell their truth. That is so challenging to some people, often people who have themselves been perpetrators of sexual violence, that instead of sitting and listening to the stories of a survivor, they push back. Oh, no, it couldn't be. So I was listening to a podcast about this pushback, and Felicity, like I said, I'm 20 years older and 100 years sassier, and I became enraged. Instead of blood, I had lava flowing through my veins, and I was just like, I need to punch. If I had punched a concrete wall, I would have demolished the entire building. That was the level of rage I was feeling.
And I almost wish we could find the security cameras of you walking down, because I think that would be amazing footage of this person striding.
And you could see like cars flipping in the background behind me. It was definitely a real Wonder Woman kind of moment. But what was interesting in terms of the creative piece of that rage, because rage can be incredibly motivating and creative, was that lines of poetry were dropping in my head as I'm stalking down 11th Avenue, just wanting to punch things. And I would pull over to the side of the sidewalk and, you know, pound them into my phone and then walk for another 100 yards and then do it again. And by the time I got to the Javits Center, I called my editor and I said, you know, my novel was so overdue. Holy geez. it was definitely not a very inspired novel. I'm so glad I ditched it, because I was just, you know, I had a contract, so I thought, I'll just write this novel. And it was a good exercise, but it wasn't a great book. But this book was written in fire. Shout was written in fire. And when I called my editor and explained what I was going to do, she was very patient with me.
Well, that's why we have good editors. That's a good editor job.
The editors are like therapists. Their job is to nod their heads and say, So how does that feel for you?
I can now imagine there's an editor therapy group for editors to go to.
There should be. We should all be like chucking money at it.
Well, and in terms of it's been over a year since the book came out, and you've toured around America and I think you've been to other countries as well. What has been the most surprising thing that you've heard from readers now that you're meeting them and they're embracing this book?
Wow. You know, it's interesting because in 2019, I toured, in 2018, I toured for the Speak graphic novel. Mm-hmm. In 2019, I toured both for Shout, and then I went to a couple different cities because we did a special 20th anniversary edition of Speak. And then allegedly I was going to go on tour here in March. So we'll figure something out. But there was such a difference between the world of 2018 and 2019, and it boils down to the conversations that we finally started to have as a country revolving around mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein and Brett Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went out for Shout, I've always had, and I think anybody who writes about sexual violence has this experience, I've never given a presentation in 20 years where I haven't had somebody come up to me either personally face to face afterwards, often in tears, or creeping into my DMs or sending me messages or just folding a piece of paper and saying, read it in your hotel room. It's mm-hmm. a constant flow, which is such a huge honor for me that people are willing to share their stories with me. But what happened when I went on tour for Shout is that people started to stand up in the audience during the Q&A. And they would say, often tears just pouring down their faces, they would say, this happened to me. And they would share whatever details they were comfortable with. And some of those people, that was the first time they'd ever said anything to anybody. Wow. And they, I have goosebumps telling you this. And they felt secure enough in this cultural moment, you know, and I keep on telling people the days of shame are over. There's never any shame for being the victim of a crime. The shame fully lies with the perpetrator of that crime and the institutions that allow that perpetrator to carry on with that behavior without consequences or punishment. But for victims, there's no shame. And it was just, oh my gosh, it was a gift. It was a treasure to be able to watch these people, these victims. And these, we're talking about people who identify in many different ways in terms of their gender identity and orientation. Some people who had been hurt as children, some people have been hurt in adolescence, college, later than that. So every different kind of story, people who have been victimized by family members, overwhelmingly people who had been the victims of somebody that they knew and trusted. And to watch them grow into their strength and power as they told their stories was astounding.
Well, I have goosebumps hearing that too. And I went to one of your events and saw that in person, and it was almost celebration of claiming identity. That was so moving to see that your words had inspired that. Yeah. So thank you for that. That's awesome. I have another question. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Mm. And obviously with stay-at-home family in place, that really changes how people can interact and engage with others about learning. But what can people do at home themselves to educate themselves about how to, you know, be aware of these things, how to raise awareness, what blind sides they have?
Thank you. That's a great question. One thing we have to be really careful and mindful about is that people who are living in unsafe housing situations, people who are living with domestic abusers, or kids living in houses where a family member or there are definitely people, women who can be perpetrators of sexual violence, but overwhelmingly it's men. And if you're living in the house with the person who's raping you 3 times a week and you can't leave right now, that's a nightmare. So we have to really, if anybody knows of anyone who has a little bit of extra cash, I know we're all tight these days, but Rain could really use the support because their hotlines are still open 24/7. And anybody who's needing to, and again, any victims who are finding that the pressures of this moment, if you have PTSD and you're in a stressful place, oh man, the bats come flying out of that locked closet in your head. And please reach out to the hotline volunteers at Rain. You can do that in text messaging, on the phone. There's several different ways. And they are waiting to help walk beside you as you work through this right now. But that said, so those are the first people I think about in terms of, so many of us staying in our space at home right now. But this is a great time for us to, let's turn this time into something constructive, right? Books are available through digital loan on libraries and through audiobooks. This is a great time to have book clubs virtual book clubs. I wrote Shout hoping and praying that it would become a book club book. Because I think that we especially people who are high school and older, high school, college, people kind of old, I guess, we need to have conversations with ourselves within the adultish community to figure out how do we talk about these things? Because very mm-hmm. few of us grew up in households where we were comfortable talking about any aspect of sexuality, much less use words like vulva and vagina and testicle in the right way. and so we've left sex in a very, very two-century old way, left sex to be something that becomes a dirty joke and discovered, in corners away from mm-hmm. the loving presence of adults who care about you. And that means mm-hmm. so many of us lack language. And so let's have a book club. Let's read Shout, read a couple other books too. If people are looking for something, a way to put some creativity into these days at home, read a couple poems from Shout and write your own. Everybody's got a story. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a story. And April is also Poetry Month.
Yes.
So how about if we start, if we screw our courage to the sticking point, and yes, your poetry is awesome, good, amazing listeners out there. So write some poetry and talk to the people you trust the most and share it with them.
Oh, I love that. That's a great suggestion. Yeah. Well, you've also had, I have to say, one of the most prolific young adult careers, and that bio that I read before is absolutely a testament to that. And your books are so beloved by authors. Like whenever I'm having people on the show or talking to other authors in real life, they always talk about you as a person they admire. Is there someone like that for you that you admire that way, that you would love readers to know more about?
Yeah, I was sort of that people don't, I don't, some people will argue with me about this, but I was in a first wave, I think, of YA that came of mm-hmm. age in the late 90s. I mean, you had individual books up until that point, like S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders. Judy mm-hmm. Blume was writing for middle grade, but got read by teenagers in the early days. Chris Crutcher was definitely out in front, along with Walter Dean Myers and a couple of other people. The truth is, I'm just trying to think, everybody who I'm excited about reading these days, I'm always trying to read, who's new on the scene.
All right. Well, who's new? Who should we be paying attention to?
Well, and some of these new kids, man, they're right. They write fast. I need to take workshops with them because I don't write as fast as they do. And I'm just so impressed with them. So Tiffany D. Jackson. And mm-hmm, her new mm-hmm. book is called Grown, Grown. She wrote Allegedly. Mm-hmm. She is the master of the plot twist. And mm-hmm. it's not just mm-hmm. a plot twist. It's a knife twist in your gut. But her new book, Grown, also looks at sexual violence. And it's a really, mm-hmm. really timely story about an adult music figure who grooms young girls, and right, so we love worshiping people who are wealthy and mm-hmm. influencers, and we sacrifice our children to them. And mm-hmm. then when our kids get hurt, sometimes people don't believe them or they feel so ashamed. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those, it's a story that will just, I don't know if I breathed the whole time I was reading it. But she also wrote Allegedly and Monday's Not Coming and a couple of other mm-hmm. books. She's just she's one of my favorite authors. Who else is new and on the scene? Adib Khorram, ADIB, you'll get this KH, what is it, KRRAH? Yeah, Adib Khorram, Darius the Great is Not Okay was his first novel, which is just mm-hmm. such a lovely, lovely book. Adib is such an extraordinary man. Now, he's got a new book coming out, doesn't he, Felicity?
Tell me about it. It's funny you should say that. It's Darius the Great Deserves Better. So it's the sequel that we had him on the show the other week, and it was a sequel he didn't intend to write, but came back to after binning a manuscript that wasn't working and sort of was like, feel like I need to go back. And so, yes. So August
I'm excited.
Is when that comes
Everybody
out.
Should put that on their list. I'm really excited about that.
Yes. Well, on that, what's next for you? Is there something that you're working on
right
now? Well,
what my next project has turned in, it's always nice when you can say that. And that is a standalone Wonder Woman graphic novel that I wrote for DC Comics.
Oh, yes. I've heard about it. Yes.
Now, I don't know if the timeline is going to be changed because of the coronavirus.
Oh, yeah.
Originally, it was scheduled for the first or second week in June this year. It's called Tempest Tossed. And I mean, I've always been a huge Wonder Woman fan. And it was really fun for me because they said, here's the rule. The rule is you have to write about Wonder Woman being 16 years old. And that was pretty much, I didn't have to worry about continuity. Thank all the gods.
Oh,
right.
Good.
I just had to start her out on Themyscira and then figure out how to get her to the US of A and let the games begin. And it was so much fun. So much fun. And of course, like, I was just going to make it light and superhero-ish, but I am incapable of not getting angry at the world because the world sucks so hard all the time, especially if you're a teenager. We just disrespect our kids so much. So there's some pretty clear statements in that book, too.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, hopefully, if it doesn't come into June, if it's going to match up with the film and it moves out, I'm still excited.
Me too.
Either way, we'll all put it on our TBRs. Well, I have so many questions, but the fan questions, they came in because we put the call out on our social media channels, who has questions for Laurie, and we got some great questions. So I've had to narrow it down, and I'm sorry if I missed your question, but I tried to pick something different for everybody. So the first question is from Lolette from Instagram, and she wants to know is, were you scared to write your story?
In Shout?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I think there's a difference between being scared and being ready. I don't think I would have written it when my parents were alive, because that would have caused them a lot of pain. Just because my parents, believe it or not, you know, delusion is strong in my family, got through life without ever recognizing that Speak was about me. And to force them into that acknowledgement in their 80s, that would have been disrespectful, and there's no point to do that. So my dad died in 2014 and my mom in 2009, and thankfully I had a lot of time with them at the end of their lives, and we ended up in a really good place. But it wasn't a question of being scared. You know, the nice thing about surviving hard things is you come to realize that that sense sometimes that we have, especially when we're young, about being afraid of what people are going to say about us, that doesn't mean shit. You know, you just have to recognize that when people react to you or something you've created, they're talking out of their own life experience. And often they're talking out of their own pain. And if they're being judgmental or critical of you or whatever, you can look at that and go, wow, somebody hurt you. I am so sorry. But they're not talking, and so that's where I think inner confidence comes in, because when you know your truth and you can walk in it, you're not ashamed of it, the world is going to always say, I mean, it's impossible to live your life in a way that will make other people happy. So as soon as you stop trying to do that, boy, you get so much time back. It's very freeing.
Yeah. Yes, indeed you do. Well, my next question is from a young gentleman from Twitter that we have just been talking about, Anadeev Karam.
Cool.
And he would like to know if you could snap your fingers and instantly change the world in one way,
universal
what would
healthcare.
Be?
Because we cannot expect our children to be educated unless their healthcare needs are taken care of. And you know what? You can't have universal health care unless all of your children have access to nutritious food all the time and their families. Maybe that's the one good thing that can come out of this coronavirus thing, is that it's time for us in the United States of America to decide if we're going to be a country or not. And if we're going to take care of each other, that's what people in other countries do. They look at other people on the streets and they don't ask them, where did you come from, or make assumptions. They say, oh, you're my country person. You're my sister. You're my brother. Did you have enough to eat today? you know, do you know where the library is? And how's your dad's asthma? And did your sister get taken care of when she fell down the stairs? You know, that's what you do in family. And that's what countries are supposed to be, is family.
Yeah, well, that's a beautiful answer. All right, well, the next question comes from L Ment Books on Instagram. And she wants to know is, do you approach writing for a young adult audience differently than you do for adults?
I've never written for adults, so I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, I mean, I think people might think that Shout should be for adults. Have you had anyone say that to you and say that they feel this is inappropriate for teens?
No.
Good. Because did you had that during Speak.
Speak gets banned all the time.
Yeah.
But Shout is just out in paperback, and book censors are usually pretty cheap. They don't buy books in hardback. So once it's out in paperback, I predict next September we'll start seeing the challenges to that.
I sense that you're going to enjoy those challenges.
Oh, I love those challenges. Daddy used to tell me to write thank you notes. When people challenge my books, it tends to be about subjects that they themselves are uncomfortable talking to teenagers about, which comes back to helping adults find the language to discuss difficult things. When you think of anybody you know, Felicity, who's an adult who is struggling with trauma, I can almost always guarantee you that trauma happened to them before they were 30. Usually before they were 20. Mm. So we have millions of people walking around, at least in the United States, I don't know about other countries, who are carrying decades of untreated, unresolved trauma on their backs. And it leads to a lot of adults into addictions, alcohol and drugs, and, you know, really hate-based behaviors, instead of, because they get angry at the whole world because they're in so much pain. So, I can guarantee you that if I ever wrote a book that was, you're never going to be able to tell if I write a book aimed at adults, because teenagers are adults. They're just adults with, without still collecting experiences.
Yeah. I like that. That's a nice way of putting it. All right. Well, you've survived all the fan questions. Now I have some at-home questions for you. So do you work from home a lot? I know you travel a lot when you're able to promote your books and talk to educators and resources and things like that. But when you're at home,
Working all the time. Because I spend about half of the year on the road. And so I've gotten really good. I've gotten some really good habits, which you have to be flexible with, obviously. At a conference, for example, American Library Association conference, Texas Library Association conference, those tend to be long days because those librarians, they like to party at night. Authors like me who prefer to get up between 4 and 5 in the morning, ooh, it's painful. Ooh. I tell you, those librarians,
this is their chance to
and
to
they
to
deserve
go
it my
them.
Goodness they deserve it
exactly.
So at those conferences exactly. Not a lot of writing get done, but generally speaking I tend to wake up early. I do my best writing before I talk to another human being in the morning. I have a little room up in the attic of my house, and that's mine. I'm very possessive of it. But I also remember the days when we couldn't live in enough space where I got to have my own room. So I claimed one corner of the couch. And when the kids were out of school, out at school, that was my book corner. And that's where I got my writing done. So I think, and it changes, of course, depending on the cycles of life. So if you can find a couple of regular habits, a space, a time of day, you know, whatever little symbols or gestures give you a feeling of, okay, it's time to work. That's what you lean into.
Yeah. That's a good, yeah. I like that. Little, you know, road signs.
Exactly.
Routine. It's a good one. Well, when you're not working and you are relaxing at home, what are what are your book recommendations for people right now to be reading?
Oh, well, first of all, go to my Goodreads. Because when I don't like a book, I'll give a book 2 stars. But generally when I give a book 2 stars, I generally say it's not my cup of tea, because that doesn't mean it's a bad book. It just means it's a book that I didn't connect
not
with.
Not for you.
So that's a really, there is one book on my Goodreads page. You should look it up, that I gave 1 star to, and I'm still angry at the author because it was a nonfiction book and it was a subject I know very, very well. And he was a coward about something and I'm still mad at him. So go get look it. At Fire. That. And,
well, no. And so here's my question about stars, because I find it really funny. Are you a generous five star, or is it just for like five stars? You have to be an amazing
it has to be best of the best for me. It's fun.
Yeah. So four stars is like an A. Very good.
Five stars is an A+.
Right.
And three. Yeah.
I'm the same way. I'm like five stars very infrequently. In that, like, when it's five stars, that means that this is like a stop your life, put everything aside, go get this book.
I wish they would give us 10 stars. Or half. That one's perfect. That's perfect. That's all we need. I just need a half star. Yeah.
I just love, because, you know, there's a lot of 4.5 stars out books out there that I'd absolutely like to give.
Yep.
But, okay. Well, what about, so you've, on your Goodreads, is there anything you want to call out now?
Oh my gosh. Because, you know, in the other half of my life, I write historical fiction. I love history so much. This year, my friends, we have a new historical fiction book that is just rewriting things for me. It is the best historical fiction I've read in probably 15 years.
Oh.
It's written by Linda Sue Park. And it is called Prairie Lotus. And it is, set kind of in the time period and geographical location as the Little House in the Prairie books up in the Dakota Territory. But, and it has that feel of Little House in the Prairie, but without the racism there, right?
That whole thing gets in the way a bit, doesn't it?
But, and Linda Sue's, she's a great writer. She's a brilliant writer. But in this book, she reimagines that time and space, and her main character had a Chinese mother and a white father. And so she like takes on the attitudes of the white settlers head on. You know, and there's a reason that that Laura Ingalls Wilder was writing from a very racist perspective, that was what she grew up in and that was acceptable for a lot of people, not the targets of the racism ever. But it is a magnificent piece of work. The craft of it is astounding. And it is, you know, when you're a writer, one of the problems becomes you get a little bit too good at pulling books apart, you know, Buster's Holiday. And, so it was one of those rare books for me where I forgot that I was reading.
Those good books.
Yeah.
That's so nice. That's nice. Good recommendation. What about when you're not reading? Do you have any fantastic TV shows that people should binge?
I'm usually about 8 years behind on most. So if you hear me recommending any kind of pop culture, you'll know that not only has it jumped the shark, but the shark died a couple of years ago and its bones are now turning into sand. What have I recently watched that I... Oh, you know what I've been comfort watching during... I've been comfort watching Agatha Christie mysteries. The book I'm reading right now is called The Splendid and the Vile. It's a nonfiction book written by another nonfiction great, Eric Larson, who writes for adults. Right? And it's about May 1940 to May 1941, and it focuses in on Churchill and the way that England handled the Blitz. And I find myself just so enjoying it. It's great writing, of course, but I want to surround myself with examples of people who got through hard times. Agatha Christie mysteries tend to be set at the end of World War II. And PBS has done several variations. So you're watching stories about an age gone by, but also an age of people who had just come through the fires. So,
okay, that's nice. I like that. Yeah, and are you a podcast listener at all? Do you listen to podcasts?
I'm a huge fan of Ronan Farrow's podcast.
Oh, yes. The question is, have you read the book?
It came out.
Catching Kill
is his book. It's an investigation into what eventually became the Harvey Weinstein. Ronan Farrow gets a lot of credit, along with Megan Toohey and another woman at the New York Times, for being dogged journalists and chasing the story. And shame on the bosses at NBC who covered it up the way they covered up Matt Lauer's stuff. And just there's this institutional acceptance of sexual violence that makes me want to set things on fire.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenes in that book that I wanted to be like, I'm going to throw things out the window because you're all garbage people.
But Ronan Farrow did a great job in the podcast. I think it's 10, 11 episodes, which ended after the Weinstein verdict came down. And going back and interviewing several of his sources and kind of expounding on things. You can listen to the podcast without reading the book, certainly, but I enjoy it quite a bit. There's also a physician in New York City. His name is Dr. Peter Attia, A-T-T-I-A. And I'm a bit nerdy about a lot of things. And physical health is one of those. I'm always trying to be healthy and strong. Yeah. And I've got some chronic illness. And so I'm always looking for ways to get smarter about that. And Peter Attia, he's just such a great, wonderful nerd. And so he'll bring on like a doctor who's an expert in sleep. And they'll talk for 2 hours. And it's like, you don't believe that 2 hours has gone by. And then I'm like, I've taken all these notes. I generally listen to him when I'm walking. Peter Attia, if anyone's, especially if you have type 2 diabetes or metabolic issues, he's a smart guy to listen to. He's been doing some recent podcasts about COVID. He's got a team of researchers who are really top notch. He's a brilliant doctor. And then I listen to a bunch of podcasts in Danish too, but you don't care about those.
Ooh. I probably wouldn't understand.
Lots of great gossip about the Danish royal family.
Well, in terms of, my one final question is, are you a gamer at all?
Not yet.
Games, video games?
Not yet. Just because my life has been very full. I have grandchildren and they're getting older at an astounding rate, much faster than their parents aged. So I suspect within the next year or so, I'm going to figure out how to do this just to play with them long distance, you know. Yeah. And I'm so afraid to start because it's given my personality. I know that once I start, I'll stop writing. So I have a few things to finish before I go down that path.
Yeah. The new excuse to the editor will be, I don't have my book, but I have a great Sims.
It's all research,
I have a great Sims.
Right?
they're happy. Well, Laurie, thank you so much for joining me on We Are Way, the Check-In today.
My pleasure, Felicity. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Yeah.
Oh, it's always great to talk to you. Laurie Hulse Anderson's books are available from all bookstores. And if you're at home, they're also available in both e and audio on your favorite platforms. You can follow Laurie on both Instagram and Twitter. Tomorrow, we check in with Marie Lu, bestselling author of the Legend series, Young Elites, Warcross, and the most recent release, The Kingdom of Back, a soaring musical historical fantasy novel. See you tomorrow.
Yay.